Those of you that tune into Organic Matters know I have a real thing about electric cars, electric transportation. Electric cars are important. There's no doubt they're coming. Not only are they coming, they're really here, but they're going to be here a lot quicker than you think. But that's not the only answer. I'm in my third year, I think, of owning an electric assist bicycle. You can't believe how convenient, how healthy, and how many times I no longer have to get in an automobile to go do a daily chore or two. A recent survey of the United States Conference of Mayors, titled "Leveraging New Technologies to Modernize Infrastructure and Improve Energy Efficiency in America's Cities." Why do they make the title so long? But there were some interesting findings. Of the 103 U.S. mayors surveyed, 55% believe that all electric vehicles were the most single promising technology from a list of 20 options presented to them. Others were low E buildings and more public transportation, but they made number one, electric powered vehicles. And folks, the only difference I make here is, again, I'm an electric bike rider right now, not soon maybe to even be an electric car owner, but yes, the difference would be tremendous if I could just convince everybody that we need to switch over as fast as we reasonably can. But I was a little disappointed because they didn't mention the pamphlet they put out was all electric vehicles. The report clearly meant e-cars, and the entire 20-page document that was just came out in November did not mention my e-bikes one time. Unlike here in the country, here in the United States, though, they're not ignoring e-bikes in Europe. And they're promoting them for use everywhere all the time. E-bikes can enable alternative ways to travel to the public car for people living in urban, suburban, and rural areas where the public transportation network is sparse and sometimes infrequent. Now, a new study, e-bikes and their capacity to reduce car CO2 emissions, finds that e-bikes could reduce carbon dioxide emissions significantly, and that the e-bike carbon reduction capability is greatest in the more rural areas, which is where I use mine most of the time. The study estimated how far individuals are comfortable and capable of going by e-bike and noted that they were particularly useful on the urban fringe where people are now forced to own cars to go relatively short distances. They did statistical analysis to figure out what proportion of the population would fit to ride an e-bike while carrying 33 pounds, enough to get around, which is equivalent to carrying a small child, shopping bags, or day-to-day items, which is what I do. They assumed that there was safe infrastructure, noting that this is a governance issue, not just a question of the ability to ride. The study did assume the maximum distance people were willing to ride, and on studies, it showed to be about 20 kilometers, which is 12 and a half miles roughly, which may be enough for many people in rural towns like I live in to get around pretty well, but may not do much in a lot of rural North America because we're so spread out. We need to fix that. I would like to add here, most people do not realize it in our part of the world even. The largest single situation that our populations live in is what we call urban core. About 30% of our populations live in urban areas. About half of that, unfortunately, live in true rural areas. And then there's a small metropolitan and larger suburban areas that are in between. But right now, the largest single use for electric e-bikes could be in the urban core areas of our cities. On kind of a good note, though, however, according to Pew Research, the vast majority of Americans live in urban and/or suburban areas now, and that puts 86% of the American population within what we call range of e-bike use on a more or less regular basis. Suburban drivers travel longer distances by car, so their use of an e-bike instead will reduce CO2 emissions dramatically. Urban core dwellers have short distances and lots of options, while the author noted that the suburban and rural areas have poor public transportation, mine does, none, and are usually car dependent. So if you look at it the right way, there's even a greater untapped potential for e-bike use. They note also that promoting e-bikes is a progressive policy because cars are expensive to own and operate. They also worry the conversion to electric cars is going to be slower than we wish it could be. And to some degree, we know that's going to happen. Matter of fact, I was thinking electric cars will be here 10 years ago more than they were, so I'm already behind the curve in that situation. I do have to say, although CO2 intensity of the car fleets that we're using will improve as it moves towards electrification. However, this is progressing too slowly to avoid the need for parallel reductions in car use, and the simulation is an attempt to quantify the scale of carbon reductions in a switch to e-bikes were to happen in a shorter-term timing. Mass uptake of e-bikes could make a significant early contribution to transport carbon reduction, particularly in areas where conventional walking and cycling do not fit journey patterns, and bus provisions is relatively expensive, inflexible, and certainly in certain parts of the country, diminished over recent decades instead of increased. And indeed, when you look at cities, suburbans, and towns across our country, North America, our continent, there are the same issues of urgency and equity. This is why the most important single-minded focus on e-car seems somewhat misguided when a faster and fairer approach would be to try to reduce the number of cars and make space for safe and secure users of bikes, e-bikes, and even walking. Not to mention the obvious health benefits of all three. Little sales pitch here, folks. E-bikes require less material and have lower manufacturing emissions than cars, for example. An e-bike battery is only like 1%, maybe 2% the size of an electric car battery, meaning far less resources per e-bike. Electrification of heat, cooking, and transport raises issues around electricity grids and supplies. E-bike chargers in the home drawer actually draw relatively low power, 500 to maybe as much as 1400 watts, and would run on existing circuits, don't have to put a new circuit in, so would not specifically require upgrades to the domestic electric grid and all that stuff. It is also important to note that power required to charge an e-bike is way, way lower than for electric cars, particularly those that are now used in rapid charging systems. I should point out here too, folks, that e-bikes just put a lot less stress on your household and power grid than an e-car would, for sure. You know, after I saw a tweet comparing how much electricity e-cars use compared to houses, I just kind of put myself a little study together and added a column showing how many e-bikes charge on one charge of an electric car. For instance, the little Nissan Leaf, which is a very economical electric car, carries enough electricity at one time to fill 80 e-bikes. And think about this, the new Ford Lightning, every time you fill it up, you could charge to full use power 300 e-bikes. A more sophisticated analysis would take their range into account, but it's obvious that an e-bike or even an e-scooter, e of any size, that you want to ride moves a human a lot further, a lot cheaper, and a lot less expensive per watt hour than anything else you can drive. Sure, people are going to continue to say, oh, not everybody can ride an e-bike. That's true. And not everybody can drive a car. The conclusion remains that from any basis of comparison, be it speed of rollout, cost, equity, safety, the space taken for driving or parking, embodied carbon or operating energy that it takes, e-bikes beat e-cars for a majority of the population. Why politicians and planners in our country alone are ignoring this opportunity is kind of a mystery to me. In places like the Netherlands, they estimate that by this time next year, by the year of 2022 ends, 65% of the people that commute in parts of the Netherlands are doing it on either conventional or e-bikes rather than in automobiles. So just a little food for thought. I have to bring this up all the time because I got one e-bike and I might end up, because of the travels I make, having a second e-bike that I can travel with. They're very good. Old man like me, either I get my exercise every day on them. I get out in the weather most of the time, unless it gets too cold. That's the only thing I can't do. It is an excellent alternative to having your car to go everywhere. This is not on the subject, but it is. I just have to bring it up. I just found this information. I search every week for updates. Fossil fuel companies. That means, of course, the petroleum, the companies that we all know. At this moment, receive $11 million a minute in subsidies. $11 million a minute, folks, to subsidize something we really should be trying to get away from. The total cost, fossil fuel company received $5.9 trillion in subsidies in the year 2021 alone, which works out to literally $11 million a minute. This is according to the International Monetary Fund and their newest report. The subsidies represent 6.8% of the global gross domestic product of the whole world, folks, are expected to rise to about 7.4% by the year 2025. And this really isn't the actual complete total, folks, but it is the total of 191 countries that we were able to add on to. But there's still a lot of subsidies going on out there that this doesn't even begin to address. The analysis actually found that fossil fuels are really underpriced, strangely enough, which leads to higher consumption, which in turn means more greenhouse gas emissions that accelerate climate change and, of course, ruin our environment, including losses to human life from local air pollution and excessive and road congestions and accidents. My estimation, people in power are causing us to spend $11 million every minute on practices that destroy our living conditions and our life-supporting systems. There's a last little fact of this. The subsidies come on top of funding that many countries give to fossil fuel companies in addition. According to the Oil Change International, G20 nations provide at least three times as much public finance for fossil fuels, over $78 billion, as it does to help find and promote more eco-friendly power sources. Meanwhile, data gathered by the Energy Policy Trackers, it's a nonprofit, a website that tracks energy investments and indicates the economic recovery packages from mostly the G20 nations, which is a lot of the oil folks. They earmark $311 billion for fossil fuel help to give to the fossil fuel companies and only $270 billion to affect clean energy. Folks, we're still going backwards. We need to reverse that so that we put the majority of the money we're putting in into the future of our children and our well-being on this earth, and not to the well-being of the pocketbooks of the rich, that especially the ones involved in the petroleum and other energy industries. Thanks once again for staying tuned to Organic Matters. Wasn't my best up week. I'll try to be better. There's just so much going on that we need to kind of track. Have a good week.